Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We've all heard the analogies between President-elect Obama's stimulus bill and President Roosevelt's New Deal. One of the programs that came out of the New Deal was called the Federal Writers Project. The project sent writers across the country to write state guides for all 48 states. Recently, author and editor Sean Wilsey and Matt Wieland set out to update the guides. Their book, which came out last October, is State by State, A Panoramic Portrait of America. The book is a collection of essays by some of America's greatest writers about all 50 states. And today I'm joined by co-editor Sean Wilsey, as well as by author Jonathan Franzen, who did a piece on New York, and author Rick Moody, who wrote about Connecticut. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. It's really a terrific book. And Sean, I want to ask you about the inspiration for the book to start. It was inspired by the original guides. What are they and why were they written?
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us on the show, too. The original guides were exactly that. They were guidebooks to the country. And the idea behind them was that the country was totally demoralized in the Depression, and they wanted to take writers who were also unemployed. And that was the ambition of the project, was to give jobs to out-of-work writers. But to write guidebooks that would inspire people towards a genuine form of patriotism in hard times. And so they went out and described the country, and they didn't just kind of give a lot of Chamber of Commerce-approved material about, like, oh, how great State X is, or isn't this an amazing building? They were really detailed, thoughtful, nuanced portraits of the country by people who turned out to be some of the greatest writers in our history. Saul Bellow was one of the writers. Ralph Ellison was one of the writers. Richard Wright, Mae Swenson. So these people, you know, got their starts in this government program and wrote amazing prose for the government.
And you have taken a page from that moment in history. And you found great writers yourself. And again, we have Rick Moody and Jonathan Franzen. And let me turn to Jonathan. For those who haven't read your piece, it is incredibly creative and thoughtful and a very unique take for an essay. Tell us how you wrote about New York.
Well, New York is a problem. Nice to be here, by the way.
It's nice to have you.
And this is actually the same day as the piece that I wrote is going to be performed tonight, actually, at the New School at 7 o'clock. I'm going to put that plug in right away.
And we'll give you another little plug at the end, John.
Please do. But, you know, New York is an impossible subject. Connecticut's an impossible subject, too. But New York has its particular difficulty in that there's New York City and there's the rest of the state. And, you know, we were given 7,000 words to try to say something substantive about a place. And I tried to do a straightforward essay. And finally, I was so thwarted by the immensity of the problem that I wrote what amounts to a play about the difficulty of getting to speak with New York State, who in the piece is personified as this woman of a certain age who had some wild days in the 60s and 70s and now has been completely lawyered up and surrounded by publicists and other handlers and is just impossible to get to. So that's kind of the comic premise, a person like me trying to get access to a New York State who's no longer so accessible.
And the Jonathan Franzen character, if I can use that phrase, in your essay,
drawn from life.
Or sketch, drawn from life, clearly. And that character falls in love with New York for the first time when he drives by Co-op City at night. What's romantic about Co-op City for you, Jonathan?
Oh, my God. Well, when you're 16 and you come from the Midwest, and I was interested, actually, reading Rick's piece that that's where the Hutchinson River Parkway begins. And I was staying out in Connecticut, fell in love with the Merritt Parkway the same trip, and spent this long day in Manhattan with my attractive, vivacious cousin and all sorts of adventures. And we found ourselves driving out around midnight up toward the Hutchinson, and there was just suddenly the city, miles from downtown, miles from anything, that was so much bigger than anything I'd ever seen in St. Louis. And it was all kind of murky in the August haze, and it was just unspeakably romantic. And I thought, yeah, this is where I want to live.
So I guess I have to ask, are you still in love?
Well, it's gotten a little bit problematic. I'm still here. Does that count?
So many relationships do.
I know. Well, you know, long term, things settle into a certain domesticity.
That's good and bad.
Hearing Sean talk about the genesis of the original WPA guides, I thought, you know, given the really miserable week publishing had last week with all of the reorganizations and cuts, you know, we really could use a true new WPA for writers. I think both for the patriotism that is nascent again now with the Obama administration, and also given how much harder it's gotten to make a living.
Well, you know, you jumped ahead, but I'm going to go ahead and take a lead from you, Jonathan, and ask Sean Wilsey, and Rick, I'm going to come right to you on this Merritt Parkway connection, which just amazes me. But real quickly, what about that? Some sort of WPA now for writers in the Great Recession, as it's
funny because Matt Wylen and I both talked about how much we would love to see that happen. And I met Obama in October, and I gave him a copy of the book. And I mentioned, you know, hey, the Federal Writers Project was a great thing. And he was completely familiar with it, which, of course, was exciting to me. But one of the other writers in the book, Paul Greenberg, has an essay coming out in the New York Times about how, in fact, what we might need more than a new WPA for writers is something more equivalent to what we've done with agriculture, paying farmers not to farm, paying writers not to write. And that, in fact, lots of writers would love to be paid not to write. And there are more writers than there have ever been before.
Yeah, and many folks who think they're writers who may not be. All right, my guests are co-editor, Sean Wilsey. I also have with me Jonathan Franzen and Rick Moody. And Rick, I want to turn to you because for this wonderful book, State by State, A Panoramic Portrait of America, you wrote about Connecticut. And Rick, you used the Merritt Parkway as your vehicle to write about Connecticut. How did you manage to capture Connecticut with a 37-mile stretch of road?
Well, I think Connecticut really ends up being noteworthy at this point in history for its bedroom communities. I think that's sort of where it begins and ends. Even the extreme far-flung portions of the state now, like the Northwest and the Southeast, still end up being suburbs because of how connected everyone is by the highway system. And the Merritt Parkway was just a really beguiling, amazing moment in the development of the highway system, in that the people who designed it were really preoccupied with the idea of making it beautiful. They really thought of it as a parkway, with all the force of that word. So it represents a kind of stunning moment in the development of the suburbs, and it's also a road that I traveled back and forth on relentlessly when I was a kid growing up in the state. So it seemed both like a great metaphor for Connecticut and like something that I knew quite a lot about.
We have a question of the day, by the way, for our listeners. It's posted on our website. When did you fall in or out of love with New York or any other state? You can go to WNYC.org and click on the Brian Lehrer Show. And turning back to Rick Moody, who wrote about Connecticut for the book State by State, Rick, you mentioned just a moment ago your childhood and that rather cozy feeling of being tucked away in a car as you drove back and forth on the Merritt Parkway. And in the piece, you talk a lot about your youth in Connecticut. I have fond memories of Connecticut in my youth as well. Went to a camp in West Cornwall. I wonder if your childhood was typical for a kid growing up in that state.
Well,
sadly, yes.
I don't know how much wife swapping there was in Darien at the time, but I know that we were on the leading edge of divorce. My parents were the first to divorce on the block, and then it swept through the community like a bad head cold. So I think maybe we weren't unlike the rest of the town. We were probably just, you know, part of the advance guard of Connecticut life.
And at the back of the book, State by State, there are some wonderful tables of where the states stack up in terms of divorce, in terms of toothlessness, obesity, all of these very interesting little factoids for trivia buffs. Let me jump back to Jonathan. I have to ask you about something you write about and that you also mentioned in your last answer, and that is a connection between New York and the Midwest. Now, for those of us who were born and raised in New York, can you explain that? What is this connection?
Well, I mean, there's a literal historical connection in that New York was one of many port towns along the seaboard, and the thing that made it New York City was, in addition to an excellent deep water port, was the Erie Canal, which the geniuses of New York State in the early 19th century dug in order to open up the hinterland. And the Chicago, the entire upper Midwest, became economically feasible early in the 19th century because there was this gateway for manufactured goods to go in and for agricultural products to come out. All of the money there had to go through New York, and so New York became the powerhouse it is. New York City did, and New York, the central state, it did because of that relationship with the Midwest. And then there's also a sort of a cultural back and forth. If you come from the hinterland, like Scott Fitzgerald or Ernest Hemingway or somebody like that, you're drawn to New York. Willa Cather, everybody. In the same way, it sucked, you know, cattle and leather and corn and wheat out of the Midwest. It also drew all of this talent. At the same time, and so one of the things as a Midwesterner you find in New York is, yeah, there are a lot of people who were born here, but the city is also full of people from the central part of the country who've come here to define themselves and reinvent themselves. So, that's what I was talking about.
One of my favorite moments in John's piece is he talks about this yin yang between the Midwest and New York, and how in the kind of placid, friendly fields of the Midwest, there's this little grasping eye of ambitious New York, and vice versa here in New York, where in this ambitious, motivated forefront of everything city, there is this kind of Midwestern kindness sometimes, and how those two things feed off each other.
And it's fascinating that you can get all of that out of a seven. How many words did you give them?
We get, actually, seven is a generous length. Some of these pieces are shorter than that. So seven is about the longest in the book. And what we wanted was, we wanted writers who we knew could actually really say something deep in a short space. And there are not very many. These two writers, John and Rick, are two of the best writers in the country.
Well, as Twain said, I would have written a shorter letter, but I didn't have the time. If you can write with brevity and really say something, you're talented indeed. We want our listeners to feel free to call in. Tell us about when you fell in or out of love with New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, or any other state, 212-433-WNYC. And I do want to mention now that Anthony Bourdain, who wrote about New Jersey for the book, was unable to join us, but we have Sean Wilsey, the co-editor, and Jonathan Franzen and Rick Moody with us. And I guess I want to ask you, Rick, if someone's visiting Connecticut for the first time, what do you think it's essential for them to know?
Wow.
Yeah, good one, huh?
What is it essential to know? Well, you know, probably the most salient and still relatively attractive feature of Connecticut is its coastal areas and its relationship to the Long Island Sound. So if you haven't come to Connecticut ever before, and in truth, you're probably lucky, but if you haven't ever come to Connecticut, the thing that you probably haven't thought about is how much of a shoreline state it really is. There's an entire border of the state that's on the Long Island Sound, and as a kid, that was really an important part of growing up there for me, was going to the water and fishing and boating and that kind of thing.
Mm. And again, your childhood very much a part of your feelings for the state of Connecticut. We have a comment and a caller. First, and you'll appreciate this one, Jonathan, Casey from Sunnyside says that I fell out of love with New York when I moved back after doing an MFA, Master of Fine Arts, in the Midwest. A few years of space and privacy destroyed my New York carapace and made my tolerance for the grime and elbows almost nil. Pretty good. And I think we have a caller. Did you want to comment, Jonathan?
Just another jaded MFA.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Let me get Patty in here. And Patty, I think you're calling in from Connecticut.
Yes, I am.
Terrific. Go ahead.
I actually went to school in the Midwest. I grew up in Indiana, and I went to Purdue. And during the summers, I would come out here to Connecticut, and I would nanny. And the first summer, I absolutely fell in love with, well, I, of course, lived under the best circumstances at the time, but I fell in love with Connecticut and the stone walls. And I loved the fact that it was so easy to escape the country and go to the city and vice versa. And then as soon as I graduated, I moved out here.
Well, that is a wonderful way to end, I think. We have someone who's in love with Connecticut and someone who sadly fell out of love with New York, but hopefully in love with some other place. And I have to mention, gentlemen, before I thank you all, that the photographs in this book are also incredibly powerful and meaningful, and each author chooses a photograph for the centerpiece. And so with that, I want to say a very special thank you to my guests, who have been authors Sean Wilsey, Jonathan Franzen, and Rick Moody. Thanks to you all, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Will be a reading of parts of the book tonight at the New School featuring Jonathan Franzen and author Sarah Vowell, actress Parker Posey, and others. For more information, you can go to our website, wnyc.org. I'm Jamie Floyd, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC.